Palestinians towards Egypt. This must not happen. And that, because I warn you, if Israel succeeds in evicting Palestinians from Gaza now and conducting ethnic cleansing, this would be an application of Smotrich, most extreme religious Jewish extreme position in the Israeli government. And it would mean that the next plan will be to ethnically cleanse the West Bank as well and throw Palestinians out of the West Bank to Jordan. These are not theoretical concepts. This is exactly what they say, what they speak about Palestinians, especially now after all this process of dehumanization of Palestinians. The other thing that Egypt must do is to provide support immediately to Gaza. We are ready to help ourselves, our people. We are ready to collect water, food supply, medications. My organization in particular, Palestinian Medical Relief Society, is already engaging in preparing all these materials. We are ready to send them to Gaza through Egypt even, but Israel says that they will bombard any supplies that come to Gaza. Here, I think it is the Egyptian and international responsibility to stop Israel and prevent that from taking place.
Dr. Barghouti, we have less than a minute, but I wanted to ask about the relationship between the PLO, the Palestinian Authority, and Hamas, well known for the tension between the two, to put it mildly.
Well, as you know, Hamas, as well as Jihad, are Palestinian political groups, militant groups that are not in the PLO. But there are problems even inside the PLO. I think now the PA feels totally marginalized, not only because of what's happening on the ground, but also because of Israel, that did everything to humiliate the Palestinian Authority. The Israeli army invades any spot that the Palestinian Authority should be in charge of, including Ramallah. And they cut off their our tax revenue. We pay taxes to the Palestinian Authority through Israel, and Israel cuts away a lot of these resources. So the solution to this is nothing but unifying all Palestinians without exception. And you know my stand. I said it long time ago. What we need is, after this war ends, is immediate free democratic elections for Palestinians. And all polls show that neither Fatah nor Hamas will get a majority. Nobody else will get majority. It will be a pluralistic democratic system through which groups like us, who are non-Fatah, non-Hamas, can try to do their best to push in the direction of democratic transformation, but also that would allow Palestinians to coexist peacefully in a good political system. At this very moment, this sounds very distant, mainly because not only the PA did not hold elections, but Israel and the United States all the time refused that we should have democratic free elections. And that does not fit with all these calls everywhere and in other places about democracy. It's another type, another form of double standard.
Dr. Mustafa Barghouti speaking to us from Ramallah and occupied West Bank, Palestinian physician, activist, politician who serves as general secretary of the Palestinian National Initiative. Next up to Tel Aviv to speak with the Israeli journalist Gideon Levy of Haaretz. Stay with us. The Wind by Naya Barghouti. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Netanyahu bears responsibility for this Israel-Gaza war. That's the headline of an editorial in the Israeli newspaper Haaretz. The paper's editors wrote, quote, "The disaster that befell Israel on the holiday of Simchat Torah is the clear responsibility of one person, Benjamin Netanyahu. The prime minister, who's prided himself on his vast political experience and irreplaceable wisdom in security matters, completely failed to identify the dangers he was consciously leading Israel into when establishing a government of annexation and dispossession, when appointing Bezalel Smotrich and Itamar Ben-Gvir to key positions, while embracing a foreign policy that openly ignored the existence and rights of Palestinians, the Haaretz editorial said. We go now to Tel Aviv, where we're joined by Gideon Levy, an award-winning Israeli journalist and author, columnist for the newspaper Haaretz, member of its editorial board. His most recent piece is headlined, Israel Can't Imprison 2 Million Gazans Without Paying a Cruel Price. Gideon Levy, if you can talk about how Israelis are responding right now, what you feel it's important for people outside Israel, especially here in the United States, to understand and to do at this point as 300,000 reservists move along the Gaza border.
Yeah, Israel is basically shocked, at least in the first 1 or 2 days. You could feel it everywhere. Nobody expected this unprecedented situation. It broke many perceptions, both about Hamas, about the Palestinians, about their capabilities, and about ourselves and our capabilities. But this is now put aside. People are still digesting what happened. The more time passes, the more horrible scenes are exposed. Day after day, I've been to the south the day before yesterday, and I can tell you I've been so many times in the south in times of war. What I saw there was nothing like it happened in the past. But I must say that side by side with what I mentioned here, there is also a big sense of taking revenge, a big desire to take revenge, and hatred toward the Palestinians is growing up to very, very dangerous levels. Same anger is also directed at the government, less than this at the army. But I think that the government, once this war will be over, hopefully soon, this government is going to pay a hell of a price, and it will must go home. I don't see this situation in which Netanyahu continues and all the ministers around him, who are all of them, no one's fascists, and they, part of them would have even been defined in Europe as neo-Nazis. Those people who called for all kinds of terrible things to do and did nothing to make Israel prepared for any danger and continue not to doing nothing. That's so astonishing that we are now the fifth day after the war, and you don't see the government. They are still preoccupied with their own political careers, with all kinds of political manipulations. Nobody takes care of the situation. The army is preparing itself for a ground operation. But except of the army, I was in so many homes which were bombed, so many people who lost their beloved one. Nobody came to them. Nobody offers them any assistance. Israel is really falling apart from this point of view. And the man who governed Israel for the last 15 years is the one and the only one to be blamed before anyone else. This goes without saying. And I guess at 6 after the war, as we say, million Israelis will go to the streets and they will have only one demand. At least Netanyahu go home. If not, Netanyahu go to court and be sentenced for this irresponsible policy that you have been committing.
Gideon Levy, I wanted to ask you according to press reports, as many as 1,500 Palestinian fighters of Hamas were killed inside of Israel. So the enormous number of militants who were able to get into Israel. Could you talk about the decision of the government to relocate large portions of the of Israel's army from the Gaza border to protect far-right settlers on the West Bank?
Sure, that's one of the big failures on Saturday, not the only one, because the first failure is obviously the surprise, the strategic surprise. We are so proud about the most sophisticated intelligence in the world with all kind of those elite units, with all the devices. They know everything. They understand everything. And then an operation which was prepared for 1 year by hundreds of militants, they didn't hear about it. So that's the first failure. The second failure is obviously that the Southern Front with Gaza was totally abandoned because we were busy with all the festivals of Sukkot, of those crazy settlers, guarding them, but not only guarding them, collaborating with them with their pogroms among Palestinians. We have clear evidence that the army saw the pogroms and did nothing. And when the army is busy for years now, not only recently, only with running and chasing after Palestinian children who throw a stone, and after all kind of suspected Palestinians, when the army is overoccupied in standing in illegal checkpoints and penetrating to Palestinian homes in the middle of the night to arrest somebody without any legal basis, then this is the result. You get, instead of a professional, motivated, experienced army, you get a bunch of no ones who don't know what to do in such a situation, because after the first shock, it took hours and hours until the army showed up. And that's unbelievable.
And this issue of Netanyahu preparing for an invasion of Gaza, you talk about the immense undertaking that this involves, having to go literally house by house or building by building in Gaza to find any of the hostages being held. The enormity of this project.
First of all, to go from building to building is impossible already, because there were many buildings still down, and I'm not sure that how many buildings were left, for example, in the neighborhood of Rimal. To find the hostages alive, really, it's nice for all kind of Hollywood films. I don't see it happening, for sure not with this army, with its capabilities, as we were witnessing it only on Saturday. The invasion into Gaza has some other goals, namely to put an end to the rule of Hamas. And this is another impossible mission, because you can kill the current top people of Hamas. You cannot kill the ideology of Hamas, and they will always be replaced. Ground operation now is supported almost by all Israelis, because Israelis understand that we have to do something after this embarrassment, after this catastrophe. But in the same time, I must tell you, I can assure you that if Israel will go now for a ground operation, it will take a few weeks or maybe a few months. It will take so much blood of both Palestinians and Israelis, mainly Palestinians, obviously. And by the end of this operation, you will invite me again to Democracy Now, and you will see that we are standing exactly in the place that we stood 1 week ago. Because as long as Israel continues to believe that Gaza, the problem of Gaza, will be solved by the sword, solved by brutal force, by emotions of revenge, justified emotions, then we will get exactly to the same place. This vicious circle will not be solved by power, not be solved by tanks, and not will be solved by troops, only by a political agreement, and above all, and first of all, lifting this criminal siege, for God's sake, after 17 years. This siege was about to guarantee the security of Israel. So what happened out of the siege, except of the unbelievable, inhuman suffer of 2 million people, what did it contribute to the security of Israel, this siege? You see the outcome.
We just have less than a minute, Gideon. I wanted to ask you the difference of the cry, the call of the families of the hostages, of older people, of young people, of children, the family members, one after another, talking about being, for example, a peace activist and saying, please use restraint. And the contrast between that and President Biden, as he addressed the nation yesterday, deciding consciously and in the readout of his conversation with Netanyahu a few minutes before he spoke, saying they did not call for restraint. Your response, how important is the president of the United States' position here? We have less than a minute.
In less than a minute, I can tell you, Amy, that last night when I was watching President Biden, I really envied you Americans that you have such a leader. I never thought so before last night. But last night, Biden was a real leader, someone that you can trust because he was extremely sincere and someone that you can rely on. If Netanyahu would have taken the same speech, he wouldn't be Netanyahu. Netanyahu is busy with politics, and here comes this Biden and tells Israel what Israel wanted to hear. I would love him also to say some things about the Palestinian suffering, the Palestinian agony. He ignored it totally, and this is very regretful. But by the end of the day, this is what Israel needs now, some kind of leadership, and it totally lacks it. Nobody is around really to understand that we have to go for a new way. Nobody is there.
Gideon Levy, we want to thank you for being with us, an award-winning Israeli journalist and author, columnist for the newspaper Haaretz, a member of its editorial board. We'll link to your most recent piece, Israel Can't Imprison 2 Million Gazans Without Paying a Cruel Price. His books include The Punishment of Gaza. Coming up, a debate between two leading progressive activists here in the U.S. over funding for Ukraine. Also, a discussion about increasing funding, military funding to Israel. Back in 20 seconds. Teardrops. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. President Biden said Tuesday he'll ask Congress to approve emergency funding to bolster Israel's retaliation on Palestinians in the Gaza Strip after the surprise attack by Hamas. On Monday, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said Congress could pass a single emergency defense spending bill in coming weeks for Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan. In order to vote, Congress must move past political chaos after hard-right Republican lawmakers who oppose aid to Ukraine ousted House Speaker Kevin McCarthy last week and have yet to approve his replacement. For more, we host a debate on Ukraine military spending with two leading progressive activists. We'll also talk about increased spending for Israel. Medea Benjamin is co-founder of the anti-war group Code Pink, author of War in Ukraine, Making Sense of a Senseless Conflict. Code Pink's calling on U.S. lawmakers push for a diplomatic solution to the war in Ukraine instead of sending more weapons. Last week, 11 members of Code Pink were arrested as they occupied the office in D.C. of Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders to call for peace talks. Also with us, Barbara Smith, an author, activist, and scholar who's part of the Ukraine Solidarity Network, co-founder of the Black feminist organization Combahee River Collective, and author of many books, including The Truth That Never Hurts, Writings on Race, Gender, and Freedom. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Barbara, let's begin with you. You are a Black feminist organizing in solidarity with Ukraine. Can you talk about why?
I know that some people... Thank you for having me, Amy. And hi, Medea, even though I can't see you. I know that many people might wonder about that because I am so known for the Black feminist politics that we started building. in the 1970s. But if people read the Combahee River Collective Statement, which was written in 1977 and published about a year later, one of the things that's even in the statement is our talking about solidarity with other people around the world. We from Combahee, not every Black feminist by any means, but my politics have always been internationalist. So because of where I live in, well, it's actually Haudenosaunee, Mohican, and Mohawk land, unceded land in the capital region of New York, known as Albany. But because of where I live, I have friends. I've been politically active here for all the decades that I've lived here. And I have friends who were involved in issues around Ukraine last year. I was very mindful of what was going on in Ukraine, but I wasn't in any organization. And they were telling me about the fights in and among people in our progressive and left communities right here locally, and how it was really very, very painful and very upsetting that people who had worked together for years, even decades, were now in disagreement about Ukraine. So there were informal meetings here, and they told me when they were, and these meetings were on Zoom. I didn't have to leave home. I went to those local meetings, started going to those local meetings. We didn't have a name at that time. And then people from our capital region were also participating. Some people were participating in the Ukraine Solidarity Network. So that's how I got involved. But as far as why I got involved, it's because my politics have always been about fighting oppression wherever it might be and whoever is targeted by oppression. And in this case, this war, this is an invasion. This is an invasion by an imperial power, namely Russia. And I stand with the people of Ukraine.
And Medea Benjamin, could you talk about why you have been persistently now calling for peace negotiations in Ukraine, and also why you oppose the funding of further weapons to Ukraine? Of course, much of that money is being spent to pay for U.S. weapons, basically for the defense industry. But there are reports now that President Biden is going to increase his request for Ukraine from the initial $24 billion additional he was asking to as much as another $100 billion that he is going to request from Congress.
Especially after your last segment, Juan, in hearing about the atrocities in Palestine and Israel, I just feel such a heavy heart about this military madness. There is no military solution in the case of Palestine. There is no military solution in the case of Ukraine. I think the sanest voices are coming from the global majority around the world that are calling for peaceful solutions to both of these crises. In fact, the president of Colombia, Gustavo Petro, at the United Nations before this latest round of violence in Palestine, came out and said that the UN needs two urgent peace conferences, one to deal with Ukraine and one to deal with Palestine, because the world needs to come together to deal with what he called the mother of all crises, which is climate change. We have to get off this treadmill of military madness that only benefits the weapons companies and brings horror, suffering, death, destruction to people who are the victims of militarism. So as progressives, I think we have to come together and say to the Democrats like Bernie Sanders, like to the Squad, you know in your heart of hearts, in fact, Bernie Sanders, we read his own words right before the Ukraine invasion, saying there needs to be negotiations. There are no military solutions to these crises. And I think for all progressives, and I'm happy to be on with you, Barbara, about this, but I think you know in your heart of hearts that we have to find diplomatic solutions to these crises. And in the case of Ukraine, we have seen from Pentagon documents, we've seen from this latest counteroffensive that the Ukrainians are not, quote, winning this war. They are losing so many of their soldiers, of their civilians. And that's why we formed this Peace in Ukraine coalition, to bring groups together from veterans groups like Veterans for Peace, World Beyond War, Progressive Democrats of America, DSA International, to build more of a movement in the United States to force the Democrats to join with those in the right wing of the Republican Party who are saying enough is enough. Stop funding and fueling this war. Let's find a solution.
And Medea, I wanted to ask you, we never hear, we almost always, when the war in Ukraine is referred to, the Russian invasion as an unprovoked invasion. We're hearing the same now about the Hamas attack on Israel, that it was unprovoked. You have a clear stand on this issue.
Well, absolutely. It's ridiculous to say it's unprovoked. And let's remember, unprovoked doesn't mean that it's justified. We say that this is a provoked invasion, that the United States and NATO, whether it's from violating their agreement not to expand NATO eastward and now surrounding Ukraine, whether it's the U.S. involvement in the internal affairs to be supporting a coup in 2014 that overthrew a democratically elected government that was had good relations with Russia and put one in that was anti-Russia, or whether it was the funding of anti-Russian groups that Victoria Nuland, the Undersecretary of State, crowed about the U.S. spending $5 billion to create this kind of civil society. The U.S. has been heavily involved in trying to shape Ukraine to be a pro-Western, anti-Russian government. And of course, the U.S. would never tolerate having an anti-U.S. military alliance on its borders. We saw what happened in the 1962 Russian missile crisis. And then there we should learn from the lessons of JFK, who negotiated and came up with a compromise with Khrushchev, and also said, when you're in a conflict with a nuclear armed country, never leave them with the option of either a humiliating retreat or the use of a nuclear weapon. And that's exactly what we are setting up in the case of Ukraine. We should be very, very concerned about more funding of this, because it is so dangerous. We've already sent in cluster bombs. We sent in depleted uranium. We're sending in longer range missiles. It will be inevitable, if this keeps going, that it will affect directly a NATO country, which will invoke Article 5 of all of NATO countries getting more directly involved, U.S. troops getting involved, and increase the likelihood of the use of nuclear weapons. We must stop the military madness.
Barbara Smith, I wanted you to get your response to Medea. Yesterday in the afternoon, you were at an anti-occupation protest. That was anti-Israeli occupation of Palestine. As Medea talks about Ukraine, your final thoughts.
So many things that were just said are about what should happen in an ideal world. Sadly, we do not live in that ideal world. We're dealing with Putin. You just said, Medea, that what we should be guarding against is a nuclear conflagration, because if we don't go to peace talks. Why are we afraid of nuclear war? It's because Putin is a monomaniacal, autocratic, imperialist ruler. That's why. And if one of the things we do in the Ukraine Solidarity Network is that we are in direct contact with people on the ground in Ukraine. Also, we are in direct contact with dissident Russians who don't live in Russia, because if they did, they would either be in prison or dead. But these are socialists. These are people with whom we share politics. I'm a socialist. The Combahee River Collective was a black socialist feminist statement. We listen to the people who are actually on the ground in those nations.
Barbara Smith, we're going to have to leave it there, but we're going to continue our conversation and post it at democracynow.org. Barbara Smith, author, activist, scholar, part of the Ukraine Solidarity Network, and Medea Benjamin, co-founder of the anti-war group Code Pink. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
CJSF is looking for new volunteers to come in and make radio. No experience is necessary. You can learn to DJ, edit sound, produce news, make posters, and host your own show. Come out to a weekly station orientation to get involved. Orientation times can be found on our website at www.cjsf.ca.
thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain.